Welcome to Q&A Quest, episode 395. I'm retired wheel host guy, dude. Mike Apps, with me as always.
Dipshit of motor vehicles, David McBurney, fanboy master.
We're tired, and no one else is here at the moment, so this may end up being a short episode.
Oh no.
Expedition 60. But we'll see how it goes. What's going on?
So many. I don't like this.
What have you done, Wheel?
I finished Lunar. Did I talk about that last week?
I don't remember.
Had I finished it last week?
I don't remember.
I don't remember either. But I finished. I'm on to second Lunar.
Lunar Eternal Blue.
Yes. Which is going great so far. I like it a lot. Don't
Good.
Have problems with the beginning like I did the first game.
Lucky so, coins.
So far, so good.
Woohoo.
Enjoy how the main character presented with character on the blue star talking of serious things. His dragon buddy talking of serious things is just like, ooh, pretty lady.
Ooh, pretty lady.
Good times. See, I'm playing that. That's going well.
That wizard came from the earth.
I have also been playing Claire Obscure, which I fired up just to check it out, see how it is. And then it was 3 a.m.
Play Fighter Obscure.
It's very, very good.
Play Fighter. Come on, fight.
It's not like some savior of turn-based RPGs or something that some people are boredly describing it as. But it's a very, very good one.
Play Fighter.
Getting, like, Lost Odyssey vibes for some reason I can't really explain.
It's something about the palette and the designs.
How the attacks animate as well.
Yeah. Play Fighter.
What have you been doing other than DMVing?
I've been trying to figure out what I'm going to latch on to next as the next thing I play.
We're all in Switch 2 wait mode.
Yeah, a little bit. Like, there's part of me that's like, yeah, I want to play the Switch game, but I want to see how it would run on the Switch 2. I've not had much time per game this past week. I can say with reasonable confidence that you had finished Lunar 1 by the time we recorded last week, because I remember that I ranted about my stupid thing that I did last week.
So. Oh, that's right. Okay.
But yeah.
Look for a review of that soon. It probably would have been sooner, but I had a very busy weekend.
Doing what?
Taking care of kids, sports,
oh,
soccer.
No. Just dad things.
Being forced to go to the gym. So my 12-year-old wants to go to the gym. Which means I have to go him. And I'm not just gonna sit there like a dope. So I had to work out too.
I mean, that's good. That's just dad things.
Yeah. Very sore.
Yeah, that makes sense. I know how that goes. Do we want to address the big news that happened?
What was the big news?
Everything Xbox got more expensive, like significantly more expensive.
That's
probably going to happen to the PlayStation soon as well. Yeah. If you've been considering getting like a PlayStation 5, I would maybe get that within the next few weeks, because I don't think we're going to see Sony as some sort of bulwark on prices at this. for those who have somehow missed it, every Xbox has gone up. I think the smallest increase was like the Series S at $80 in mm-hmm. terms of price. So that's like $380 now or something. But every Xbox has gone up in price significantly. The Series X is now $600. The 2 gigabyte, excuse me, the 2 terabyte Series X is now $730. And starting in the fall, like they weren't firm on dates, but they basically said a lot of their fall games are going to be $80.
Poop.
But hey, this is not a surprising outcome. Like, this is happening all over the world. But, like, normally, in the past, as prices have slowly slid up for these consoles, the U.S. has been uniquely, like, shielded from that. Not anymore. The things went up here, same as they went up everywhere. That's just how much these things cost now, apparently. Can't remember if I actually said or just thought it last week, but I was, in the last episode, I was definitely at least thinking, if you think that the Switch 2 games, like, if you think Mario Kart World being $80 is an aberration that no one else is going to try, guess again.
It's funny.
Yeah. You're probably going to start seeing some slightly more variable pricing in AAA, just because, $80, pretty premium. Pretty premium pricing. Like I would say, you'll see more stuff like how, Mario Kart World, very premium price for a very high import, a game of great importance. But you look at Donkey Kong Bonanza, that's a $70 game. You'll probably see some of that from Microsoft as well, and I think we're seeing that with the other thing they just fucking announced for some fucking reason. Gears of War Reloaded, which is totally outmoding the last Gears of War remaster they did. So this is another Gears of War 1 remaster, I think. And if you have a digital copy of Ultimate Edition, it just replaces that. Reloaded is coming to PC, PlayStation, Series X. We might end up seeing it on Switch 2 at some point. Who knows? But that's a $40 title, and that's largely because it's a remaster of a remaster at this point, I think. But yeah, you'll likely see remasters continue to be like kind of the less expensive thing, and then for big new premium titles, I don't remember if we have a firm idea of when the new Gears of War comes out, Emergence Day.
I totally forgot that was a thing.
Yeah, they announced that at one point, Gears of War E-Day. I don't think that has a firm release date. That's going to be an $80 game. They sell you Reloaded to remind you that you care about Gears of War. They sell you that a little cheaper, and then Gears of War E-Day comes out, and that's an $80 game. Like, that's probably the tack that they're going to take with this. But yeah, we're going to see some greater price discrimination on AAA games kind of start to reappear, I think. Just to make sure that there's still, like, things you can buy at non at not the most premium prices, and it'll, by extension, it'll make the most premium games look a little more premium, and it'll make the still kind of expensive $50, $60 titles feel like more of a bargain. Like you're probably gonna see that for a while. But yeah, that's the shape of things at the moment. Let's get the actual price raising action here. Okay. Let's get the actual numbers for what changed. Okay. Yeah, so the base Series S is now $380. The 1 TB Series S is $430. Series X Digital is now $550. To clarify what kind of price changes. For both Series S's, that's an $80 price bump. Series X Digital went up by $100 to $550. Base Series X went up $100 to $600. Series X 2 TB Galaxy Special Edition is now 730, up from 599. So that's actually a $130 price increase.
Jeez.
And like all the accessories went up as well. Although generally to slightly lower degrees. Like wireless controller, like the Elite wireless controllers went up by like 10, 20 bucks. Although if you were already willing to spend $180 on a controller, you're probably not too sticker shocked by having to spend 200. But still, all these are gonna take. And then what did they say as far as games? Want to see the exact statement they made. Fact statement that they made about. Oh, I can find the actual announcement page. There we go. As of May 1st, we have adjusted recommended retailer pricing for our consoles and controllers worldwide. We also expect to adjust the pricing of some of our new first-party titles starting games starting this holiday season to $79.99. So, yeah, they say some of our first-party titles, so I would suspect that they are, again, going to sort of do some price discrimination on, like, what they think they can get away with $80 on and what they cannot. Same as what we're seeing with Nintendo. Like, Mario Kart World gets to be an $80 game because it's fucking Mario Kart.
That sounds
Like,
huge, also.
Yeah, it sounds huge because they spent a shit ton of money on it. Oh yeah, that's another thing. Grand Theft Auto 6 got delayed.
Bleh.
That is now set for May of next year. Per Jason Schreier, who of Bloomberg, who generally is the most reliable person about industry insider movement. Allegedly, no one at Rockstar believed that that title was a fall 2025 game anymore. No one had believed that for a long time, as far as he reported on his Blue Sky. But if the claims that he's making are true, apparently this was done as part of a genuine attempt to avoid crunching the game. So,
That's cool.
if true, I applaud it. Credit where it's due. But yeah, it's a time like I saw a number. I think I referenced this the last time we talked about this, but I saw a lot of people sort of responding to the price on the Switch 2 and on Mario Kart as though it was like a unique anomaly that like Nintendo was doing this out of some sort of hubristic choice, and it's just like, no, we're just, you know, in America we think of it as just like the tariffs did this, and the tariffs definitely had something to do with this. But if you've been watching the way that prices have moved throughout the world, like, on these consoles since their launches, like, none of them's really gotten cheaper. And in a lot of territories, they've continued to go up. In part because of, like post-COVID, a lot of places experienced inflationary action. The U.S. was somewhat shielded from, relatively speaking. We definitely had inflation, as anyone who lives here could tell you, but the inflation was not as bad as it could have been. And beyond that, like, there's been just in general, because the U.S. is a very large market with where, like, scales, the economics of scale can work in your favor, there's been some, like, incentive to sort of shield the U.S. consumers, especially from these increasing prices as best they could. And we've just hit a point where, like, that's just not tenable. You can't artificially keep the price down in the U.S. compared to elsewhere and expect that to work out monetarily in your favor. So, you know, we're just seeing all this happen at once. Like, as this IGN article that I was initially cribbing the Xbox info from points out, like, Sony did this essentially everywhere but the U.S. like 3 weeks before before this. This isn't even the first time that the Series X has gone up in price. It's just the first time it's done that in the U.S. The reasonings for this, to the best I've been able to tell, have something to do with, like, chip fabrication and, like, fucked up supply chains that we're still reckoning with from COVID. Supply chains are going to get way, way worse in the U.S. very soon, but that's a U.S.-specific problem. But yeah, like, it's a tough time. It's gonna be, like, I'm not gonna lie, it's gonna be hard in the next few years for a lot of consoles to really stake a claim as to why you would use them. Like, as someone who prefers to use consoles, like, there comes a point where it's like, well, you're not that much cheaper than a PC at this point. So the argument has to be you're so much more convenient, it's not even close. And we've seen that, like, the current crop aren't that much more convenient. And so we're running into this identity crisis that I think they're hoping they have something to solve by, you know, like, Microsoft's strategy, as we've observed over the past few years, has been they seem to be just be biding their time until the Xbox is not specifically a dedicated piece of hardware. You'll still be able to buy an Xbox, but it's not a dedicated piece of hardware. It's a suite of software.
It's like their Surface books. Like, you can buy this to use Windows on. You don't have to, but it's an option.
Yeah, they want you to have Windows.
Yeah.
Similarly, they'll still sell you an Xbox. They want you to have an Xbox, but Xbox is a suite of software tools that they want to sell you.
Yeah.
Some of the statements from Mark Cerny would imply that, like, they're gonna try something, maybe not similarly transformative, but relatively transformative to the PS6. Like, you know, because part of the reason that these prices, like, you know, why you would look at something like a PS5 Pro and just sort of get that gobsmacking, like, $700 price that, you know, again, is probably going to go up soonish. Part of the reason you're going to see those, you're seeing those is just that, like, you know, limitations on manufacturing, very limited returns on graphical games. Like, every generation, we've noticed more and more, like, extremely limited returns on graphical game. Like, I've ranted, and we've both ranted for years that, like, the limiting factor on the current generation of games has long since ceased to be the machine can't handle it, and more the limits of how many human beings you can coordinate together to produce something.
And often, and those efforts don't produce anything that anyone really notices, like the Spider-Man 2 problem.
Yeah, like, you know, you have to, like, Insomniac's response feels like insane, because it's like, oh, you know, they sold 10 million copies of that, that definitely turned a profit, and it did. But the answer is that it didn't, like, relative to the amount of money they poured into it, it didn't make anywhere near as much of a profit as Spider-Man 1, just by dint of the fact that it would need to have sold like 30 million copies to reach that relative amount, because they tripled the budget. This doesn't make sense. This none of this makes sense anymore. Mario Kart World is going to do gangbusters for Nintendo, and it's going to be hard to really describe whether it does more, like, you know, in the long term, since it's a system seller, like, since it's their thing that they're pinning, like, you want a Switch 2 because you love Mario Kart and you want the new one because Mario Kart is their best-selling, most consistently high-selling franchise.
Mm-hmm.
It was the only thing that budged the Wii U back in the day. Like, that needs to be remembered. Mario Kart 8 was, like, one of the only things that produced a noticeable increase in Wii U sales.
You know, and that's a good point, too, because you look at all these graphical advances, and then you look at some of the highest-selling games in the past generation, and two of them, Breath of the Wild and Mario Kart 8, ran on the Wii U.
Yep. And, you know, they're both great-looking games, but, like, they're also kind of pointing at... I'm not sure if I've mentioned it in this fashion, although I probably have. It's like, it is not remarkable for a game to look good anymore.
No.
It is, there. I've not, in the past 10 years, I don't think I've seen something that's like, there were times on, like, PS1, PS2, even to a lesser extent, like PS3 and 360, although by that point this was getting rare. But you would see these big budget games, and they would look like they were almost on a completely different console than low budget ones. Like, you would see games that, like, were genuinely baffling how much more polished and higher quality they looked than their contemporaries. And at this point, I don't think, like, you can see games that are extremely low budget, but, like, if a game is of any meaningful budget at all, it probably looks good. Like, yeah. To the point where you'd have to sit down and really take a close eye to it to get, you know, you have to get into that Digital Foundry headspace to be able to spot, like, oh, this doesn't look good, this doesn't look right. And it's like, yeah, man, I don't notice that. I didn't look at the textures. I wasn't looking that hard. I think it's very rare that you find games at this point that don't at least look fine to most people's eyes. Remember, like, one of the things to remember, the best-selling game of all time is Minecraft.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people put on all sorts of, like, texture packs or whatever, but for the most part, like, I think most of those players are just playing it looking normal.
Yeah.
Like, we're now at a point where, like, an entire generation of players grew up with the idea that, like, oh, it's novel sometimes to see a really nice looking game, but they all look fine. Like, you know, you're so used
Roblox.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the next generation, but yeah, like, you know, it's just, this is not, like, you cannot differentiate purely on aesthetics anymore. It doesn't work. Like, there's just not enough headroom there to, like, make it look like you're in a completely other, you're playing a whole nother ball game. It's just not happening. No matter how much money you have to throw at it. And, like, you'll occasionally, like, you know, if you go to the right, like, sub-communities, you will find people that are like, I need 8K, I can't deal with these low-resolution 1080p games. And it's like, yeah, sure, okay, you do that. I will call back once again to one of the funniest responses that a poorly selling, extremely niche product has ever gotten. The infamous response from SirTech to the poor reception of Wizardry 4, The Return of Weirdna. To quote Wikipedia, Wizardry 4 sold very poorly. Despite the lengthy delay, SirTech had not advanced the technology from the first game. Bard's Tale's graphics were considered superior, blah, 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 blah. Further, as Robert Sirotic of SirTech has said, it was insanely difficult to win that game. Lengthy quote to follow. I had such issues with that, I felt that it was way beyond what was necessary in terms of complexity. The people that developed it felt strongly to leave a mark in the industry that they had the hardest game to play, period, bar none. That's fine if you're not worried about catering to a customer and making sales. Return of Weirdna was the worst-selling product we ever launched. People would buy it, and it was unplayable, so they'd put it down, and word spread around. There were other hardcore players in the market that loved it. They said, ah, why doesn't everyone do this? Well, we don't, because you guys are a minority. If you're a glutton for punishment, you're going to have to get your pleasure somewhere else, because nobody can survive catering to such a small number of people. And he's talking about making a really goddamn hard game, but there is something to be said for, you're going to have to get it elsewhere, because nobody can survive catering to such a small number of people. And just sort of, like, bear in mind that, like, the cost of producing, you know, I had the infinite, like, confusion of, like, staring in horror at, like, just out of morbid curiosity, I went and looked at, like, I don't even remember what subreddit it was, but I was like, what is the actual person that is like, I need an 8K game, I need 8K games. And it was just like someone like, I have a fucking gigantic monitor directly in front of my goddamn face, and I can see the problems with 4K. And it's like, one, I don't think you can actually see that. I think you've convinced yourself you can see it. But I think in a double-blind test, you'd have difficulty. But the other is that, you know, it's just one of those things that, like, the person that says, like, I need content for my fuck off monitor, that, you know, I spent like thousands of dollars on, is not a market you can survive catering to. I do appreciate, like, how I want to finish out this quote, not because it's relevant, but because I appreciate Robert Sirotic's extremely irritated comment. So it was controversial in that way. In the end, I think I was proven correct that making crazy impossible products in terms of difficulty was not the way forward. he was very, very irritable about that. But yeah. Like, Return of Weirdna, incredibly weird game. We've talked about it a number of times. But yeah, one of my favorite, like, quotes of just someone talking, like, very, very blatantly about, like, you're a tiny addressable market, and we can't keep catering to you because we'll die. But an ongoing problem, like, you know, and you can make the other thing To tie this back to Clair Obscur, you can, if you just are using the, if you have a strong set of art director, set of art direction, and you are just using the tools, the middleware that makes sense, like Clair Obscur, like it's not the 30-man project that you know, some have downplayed it to, but it's still like, by compared team. To a AAA, yeah, it is still a, relatively speaking, a very small team. And I mean, if you're looking for it, you can see it, but you know, it's not. It looks great. There's no reason, like, you know, and if you can get that far with resources like that, you know, it's, there's just not a lot of worth in going like complete in like sending yourself to hell trying to get that extra, like that extra 5% better looking.
Yeah. And I mean, to be honest, they probably spent the budget that could have been spent on that getting some really good actors for their game.
Yeah. I mean,
I'd
like
rather
that,
see money which... spent on that.
Yes, like, you know, the really good actors, the orchestra that they hired, like, that sort of thing. Those are, you know, all of these are, everything is competing for budget. Everything, like, these are just big, these are big, like, corporate projects, which means everything is fighting for what gets the money. And I think that getting big name actors who drew attention to the game probably made its money back way better than if the game looked 5% better. It really is just like, no, there's no fighting for that last, that extra 5% of shine. It's just not, it's not paying off when it comes out.
No,
like, because it's just
really not.
It just doesn't, like, you know, even just consider what your marketing materials look like. Like, you know, people see screenshots or like 90-second YouTube trailers that have been compressed to shit. Like, they can't see that anymore. Like, they can't just look at your game and be like, "That's incredible" compared to the other thing I'm looking at. It's just like, here's another pretty game. There's so many pretty games. So you need to. You can't just live this. You can't live like this. You cannot live like this. So yeah, I hope that, you know, for good and ill, I hope that like these people continue to find ways to make these projects smaller and more sustainable, because that's the way forward. And the other thing is, you've kind of hit the addressable market. Until your game is releasing in another gigantic territory, like, you know, you should be trying to release your game in China for one thing, but until your game is releasing in another giant territory, we've kind of seen the peak of the addressable English market. Like, there's not a lot of other places you can take it. So the answer is you have to work with what this market can sufficiently pay for in order for that to make sense. So, you know, you need to make smaller games. You need to make them faster.
Mm-hmm.
And the way to do that is to not shoot for that, like, this mythical level of, like, additional polish in terms of, like, not even just in terms of graphics, but, you know, because it's just not a differentiating factor anymore. Like, yeah, so that's the rant. We've done some variant of that rant, like, a dozen times, but,
yeah,
you know.
I think I've done that rant just about Monster Hunter.
Yeah.
Because I think that's kind of a microcosm of that whole issue. Like, the big games are not as good because they're trying to do too much.
They gotta be everything to everyone.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, it's it's rough to watch, and I don't think that like we've seen the end of video games. We are going to see a substantial market adjustment.
I mean, there's a huge market for video games. So yes.
Oh yeah, I'm just saying gross. Like the I'm saying in the AAA space we're going to see a pretty substantial market adjustment. But yeah, but you know, there needs to be a correction to sort of, you know, bring things back into like a sustainable like production process, because otherwise it's shit's over, buddy. But yeah. Otherwise, I have shit all else to say.
Switch 2,
that looks fun. I'm gonna play Mario Kart, and then I'm gonna play things that aren't Mario Kart, like
Rune Factory.
Yeah, like Rune Factory, Cyberpunk. Or like Cyberpunk, or Street Fighter, or Yakuza Zero Director's Cut. I've been looking at that, and they're like 23 minutes of new cutscenes, and I'm like, I don't know what you're considering a cutscene, and thus how substantial that should be, because, hoo boy, those games have lots of cutscenes, but I don't know what you're counting. But I'm interested because I like Yakuza Zero, and I want the excuse to replay it. It's been a minute. But yeah, I mean, you know, the Yakuza games are ones that are also, you know, they're not small productions, but they make aggressive reuse of assets, which allows those games to come out at a rapidity that is very difficult to even comprehend for other franchises. And
yeah, I don't explain to me how they come out so often.
Aggressive engine reuse, aggressive, like multiple teams making games at very different scales. Like, you know, like a Dragon Guide and the Man Who Erased His Name, that team eventually, that team, I believe, went straight on to Like a Dragon Pirate Yakuza in Hawaii. Making aggressive reuse of the assets that were created for Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth in the intervening like 18 months. And that meant that they could make a game in like 18 months. Like, you know, they reused a lot of technology, they reused a lot of assets, and they just took and they just made something very off the wall, because, you know, that would allow them to produce something quickly, but which would also stand out from the other projects that they were making, like a Dragon Infinite Wealth, like Project Century that's forthcoming. Like, all of those rely on, you know, we've got a lot of technology that we can use, we've got multiple teams who are all working, who are all familiar with that technology and are working in tandem, but who, you know, have enough creative leeway to produce something that is very that, you know, still has a unique identity from each other. You would not mistake Pirate Yakuza in Hawaii for Infinite Wealth for Project Century. But they can produce them with extreme rapidity because, again, they reuse assets with such fervor, and I think that's gonna have to be one of the ways forward. You know, you make something and it needs to be like, you have to ignore the person that like goes on Twitter and screams at you in fury that they have seen this model somewhere before, and it's just I don't care, die mad. Like,
it's one of those things like if the one of the things with asset reuse is if it was good before, why are you making it again? If you don't have access to new technology that allows you to make it better, and guess what? Most of these companies don't have access to that. Why are you going back and making it again?
It goes against all the core principles of programming.
Yeah, like it's just, that is an awful waste of time. And it, you know, there's always, like, it produces problems tenfold because, like, you, the other thing about the old asset is you already know what it does. You know what its quirks are. You know if there are any, like, you've tested it for all sorts of problems. You know they're fixed. There's absolutely zero reason to go back and make another one if the old thing works. You know, like, even looking back in the day, like, you know, I've... The gold standard for a sequel that you would never, despite reusing almost the entire asset catalog, you would never mistake for its predecessor, is The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask. A game built around, we're just going to reuse everything. Literally everything.
Seriously.
And then... But if you play the game, it's like this could not feel more different from its predecessor. It's impossible to describe how much the everything is structurally designed to force you to play the game differently. Like, you know, and that's one of the core things that, like, I think one of the issues you run into when you have to break out of this paradigm of increasing technology is that the most linear idea of how to make a sequel doesn't work as well anymore. Without a system rethink, if you can't rely on, well, all the assets are obviously different, what you produce is something that feels that doesn't feel like a sequel anymore. And so that might be part of why there's a certain inertia from publishers to, like, try to maintain this idea, because, you know, what is a sequel if it's not a huge technological change? Well, that's very individual.
What if it's a Joe? What if that?
Hello, Joe.
Hello. What is a sequel? A miserable little pile of recycled assets.
Yes.
Speaking of games that recycled assets aggressively, Castlevania.
Absolutely.
No one ever complained about that.
I did know some people that complained about that. But, you know, it's one of those things, like, those, especially once you get to the DS, those Castlevanias tend to have very interesting and weird gameplay hooks that sets them apart. Like, you would not mistake Dawn of Sorrow for Portrait of Ruin for Order of Ecclesia. They're all very different, despite the fact that those Rondo of Blood sprites were now on their, like, 16th year by the time Order of Ecclesia came out. But yeah, that's all I have to say. Joe, you talk about what you've been playing while I go and get a glass of water.
Sure. Well, let's see. So last week I was already talking about Clair Obscur, and I know you guys were talking about it, and I saw you playing it, and that's fine, but I kind of just gave up on it. I just keep missing the dodges and the parrying and keep dying. And I was like, well, wait a second. This is exactly what Game Pass is for. You got to try it. You didn't spend $50 on it, so...
Just put it on narrative mode.
But then I started thinking, I'm like, well, gee, if you just want traditional turn-based combat without the parrying and dodging, go play Metaphor. You didn't finish that.
That is a good idea. That's a very good
point. And then if you want something more action-oriented with the dodging and stuff, then play FF7... Rebirth, play Visions of Mana, play Dragon Age Veilguard. It's like, let's think about this. There's games you actually bought that you actually like. Maybe you should just play those. Yeah. God. What a novel idea.
It's a revelation.
Blasphemy.
It's a revelation.
It stinks.
So I was like, all right, you know what? That's fine. I'm not going to play this anymore. And the thing is, there are other games I've played that have parrying, and I think they do it better, and I liked them more. I mean, like, I was thinking about how, you know, in Dark Souls, you have parrying, but you also have blocking, dodging, or just get out of the way. You know, you can always switch over to firebombs and knives and just keep your distance, and or you can have a bow and arrow, you can use spells. And then in Sekiro, like, block and parry were the same button, so if you fail the parry, you still block. You know? And then, like, Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, I really enjoyed that. I had to lower the difficulty towards the end because I was getting my ass kicked, but I thought that had a decent system. You know, if you deflect the stormtrooper bullets right back at them, that's fun. And then Street Fighter VI has a good parrying system. It's, you don't have to do it, and it's not that hard. If you hit the button early, then you might just lose a little more meter, or you might leave yourself open for them to throw you or something, but, you know, so there's other games that have that mechanic that where I didn't struggle so much. And then last night after Shenanigans, I was playing Super Mario RPG on the Switch, and I'm like, yeah, this has like your timed button presses, but it's not that hard, and then you don't get one shot at every time you miss, you know? So
it's also designed to be way easier than...
Yes. Yeah, that's what I mean. So I'm like, you know what? There's other games with similar mechanics that I don't hate. And
well, you can always try other games. It again. There is a narrative mode that makes everything more forgiving.
Yeah, it's an ego thing. I would have just felt like a total loser if I beat it on easy.
No one cares.
I know. I care. No one would ever know, but I would know.
This is an old problem. There's a reason that Konami changed the name of normal to child mode on Rocket Knight, as we so often reference to. I'm not blaming you. I'm saying like that is an old problem.
Tam has a comment in chat. He says, "Wait, Joe doesn't hate games?
Sometimes he even likes them.
Sometimes, yes.
Sometimes I like them." Yeah.
Yes, like we played Mario Party last night. Okay, now that
No, we're never playing that again.
No, we are finishing that game. We are going to finish that. Yes, that game will be finished.
You will finish it with...
I refuse to play anything else on Shenanigans until that match is complete.
Daga, not the water.
Okay, fine.
We should talk about the most recent piece of news, the most recent piece of baffling news.
Okay.
Echo the Dolphin is coming back?
Yeah!
Why?
They're remastering 1 and 2, and they swear whatever earthly remains of Appaloosa's like team have come back together to make some sort of Echo the Dolphin 3, ignoring the two prior Echo the Dolphin products that have occurred since Echo the Dolphin 2. To ignore Echo Jr., that was technically an edutainment game, but Echo the Dolphin, Defender of the Future for Dreamcast and PlayStation 2.
Just, I didn't know that existed.
Yeah, it's 3D. It's not very good.
Echo Jr. was fun for about, I don't know, maybe an hour.
It's an edutainment game for child. So
it's more fun than I had with the other Echo games. Echo Jr. was like, okay, I can just jump out of the water and swim around and have fun, and okay, and then regular Echo is just like, the fuck is going on?
I'm in hell. welcome to the machine. The other thing I will say that's very funny is that the last game Appaloosa Interactive made was Jaws Unleashed.
Oh my god.
It's a very strange game that sometimes requires you to leap on land and bite scientists so that you can use their key cards to open doors.
That's awesome.
You should just get the developer of Man-Eater to make the new
one. I was just going to say Man-Eater.
I'm still I don't want to rant about this again, but I'm still so angry that they did not license that song for that game.
That must like, why? It's probably at least a little expensive.
I mean, yeah, I'm sure, but
you did call it Man Eater.
Whoa, here he goes. Yeah.
Watch out, boy. She'll chew you up.
So let me tell you, when I did finally drop Rocket Knight Adventures to children difficulty, it was like, oh, this is actually still hard. Okay.
Yeah, because it was originally normal.
I know. In Japan, that would have been normal. And it's like, okay, I felt better about it. You know, when I finally beat it, and it was like, oh, okay, that was actually fun on the lowest difficulty. Okay. It was still hard. So I don't know. Yeah, Clair Obscur. Maybe I'll give it another shot at some point. Who knows? It'll probably be on Game Pass for a long time. But like I said, there's games I actually bought that I really like, and it's like, why don't you just play those games?
I mean, I'm really enjoying Clair Obscur, but I don't think you should. If you're not having fun, then don't fucking play it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and I'll admit, you know what? I'm jealous. There's other people who seem to be having a lot of fun with it, and it's like, oh, well. What are you going
to
do?
I'm going to round to it eventually.
There's people that enjoy Call of Duty, and I don't care.
I used to, and then I played it too much and got burned out, and there's too many cheaters.
Like, the answer is don't try to force yourself to enjoy a video game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. So I was playing some Metaphor, and just got to the part where you get the, like, the carriage or airship, whatever they're calling it, and you meet the other contenders to become king. Yeah, and then I remembered that, oh wait, if I use the bathroom, I get boosts to my stats. So I kept doing that.
Yeah, you get plus one luck every Friday, I think, if you use the bathroom that day.
Yeah. So I had him use the bathroom, he got plus one luck, and I'm like, oh, he got lucky on an airship. He's in the Mile High Club now.
I don't think that involves shitting.
I thought it was funny. But I was playing that. And then what else was I playing? I was playing the Stanley Parable Ultra Deluxe Edition.
Stanley.
Is that what he said?
Stanley,
yeah. Stanley.
I haven't actually played that game.
Yeah, so I played the original. Said a lot. I played the original on PC with my brother, and that was a long time ago. And we both got a kick out of it, just trying to find all the endings. And the Ultra Deluxe Edition, I didn't buy it when it came out, and then I got it through PlayStation Plus Essential. It's like, oh, okay. So I finally got around to playing that, and I actually live streamed it twice, and it's like, oh, this is great. Like, so all the original content is still there, right where you expect it to be. But then after you beat the game a couple times, like, you got to get a few different endings, and then a new door opens that says new content. And the narrator is so disappointed with the new content that he decides to make his own new content. He starts pitching you a sequel. And that's when you get the bucket. And let me tell you, that bucket is amazing. It is the coolest bucket ever. Stanley loves his bucket, and as rightly he should. And once you get the bucket, then you go back to the original area, and you go to the same spots where all the old endings used to be, but now there's new endings as long as you're holding your bucket. And it's amazing.
What does he do with the bucket? You know what?
You just carry it around. But while you're carrying it, you get different narration and you get different endings. Yeah. And sometimes the bucket talks to you, but it's actually just the narrator.
And then there's a bucket list.
And there's a broom closet that you can go into that I don't remember from the original. So they might have added a few other new things here and there. And then there's and so then after you do, like, the new content, then the title screen changes to The Stanley Parable 2, even though it's not actually a sequel, but it's funny. And there's, like, these statues you can collect, and the game tells you repeatedly there is no reward for collecting them all. And I collected them all, and there was no reward. It's like, all right, fair enough.
You the game sure promised that.
Like I collected them anyways.
Like when you get all the fucking. It's like when you get all the Korok seeds in Breath of the Wild, and the game gives you a turd.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you get all nine, like the game stops rewarding you after about 400. If you get all 900, it gives you a golden turd.
Wow, that's awesome. I want it. Yeah.
Oh God, no! Don't do that.
So, and then there's a new ending where you. You try to go to a spot you've gone to before, but now there's a sign that says no buckets and the door shuts. And the narrator's like, why the hell? Why would you try to go through that door with the bucket? There's clearly a sign. He's like, wait a minute. Could it be that you don't actually know what a bucket is? Oh, man, that would just ruin the entire gameplay of this whole thing. Okay, hang on. I've got an idea. You go in this room and he shows you different objects and you have to tell him if it's a bucket or not. Yeah. It's freaking hilarious.
That's good. I need to get around to that.
And then if you do, and then what happens now is each time you boot up the game, it has you put in their sliders for different settings, but then it starts talking to you and it's like, oh, hey, you seem to really enjoy, you know, working with these sliders. And it has you enter the time and it's like, oh, wow, like you actually entered the time. You didn't just skip over it at 12 a.m. Wow. Cool. Good for you. And eventually, when you get to the title screen and it offers an epilogue, so then that's another new area you can explore and other funny things happen and it's just flipping amazing. Yeah. So yeah, I love Stanley Parable and then the Ultra Deluxe Edition. Just it's all of that same content and then more. While I was exploring one of the new areas, I found a copy of Infinite Jest sitting around, and I'm like, well, that explains everything.
Nerds.
It's like, no, that the entire... Everything about this game makes so much sense when you find that. You're like, oh, of course they read that book.
First of that kind of nerd.
Yeah, I'm that kind of nerd. I finally got around to watching that movie that came out years ago about David Foster Wallace. It was the Rolling Stone guy who interviewed him right in, like, 1998. And then was kind of on part of his tour with them. And so the movie's called The End of the Tour. And it's just conversations that they had during, you know, interviews and stuff. No, that was a neat movie. Let's see. What else did I play?
Mario Party.
You also played some Pokemon.
That lasted for like a minute.
Oh yeah, Pokemon Stadium 2. Well, I was winning, so of course you quit.
It was boring.
I was winning. So what else did I play today? Let me think. Well, no, last night after Shenanigans, I was playing Super Mario RPG on Switch. I got to go back and finish that. I thought they did a great job with it. Just same game, better graphics, some quality of life improvements, and it's exactly what you'd want from a remaster, and I got it as a Christmas gift. I didn't pay a dime, so yippee. Worked out pretty well. I was playing Blue Prince today. That is a neat game. I don't know if I'm going to keep playing it, though.
But I can't play it because it's roguelike.
Wow. Yeah, it's roguelike, and
drinking your haterade today.
I'm always like, drinking my roguelike haterade.
I played it for like 2 hours, and I was on my eighth or ninth run, and I was getting frustrated. Yeah,
it's trapped like us, baby. We were born to run. Sorry, I'm just trying to use music to keep myself awake.
Oh my god, I'm sorry. Sidebar for a second.
Sure.
So that famous Bruce Springsteen song mentions suicide machines, right?
Friends, I want to guide your dreams and visions. Yeah.
Listening to a song that's in, I forget if it was in Tony Hawk 1 or 2.
There is a band called The Suicide Machines.
Yes, exactly.
In that soundtrack.
And it never occurred to my brain until today, partially because I haven't actually seen that band's name a lot. It never occurred to me until today that that might be a Bruce Springsteen reference.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know if love is wild, babe. I want to know if love is real.
It mean, who doesn't love
it? Yeah, it hadn't occurred to me that they were also probably referencing that. Yeah.
Yeah. Who doesn't love the boss? Come on.
Yeah.
I cannot imagine someone not enjoying Born to Run.
Yeah, seriously.
But, like, why were they booing him on SNL that one time?
Who? I need names.
Oh, it was years ago. Bruce Springsteen was on SNL with Paul McCartney, and people were booing. And I was like, "The fuck is wrong with?"
Were these they booing,
people?
Or were they saying boo-erins?
They might have been saying Bruce. I don't know.
It could be. Sometimes there's chants like they could have been like a Bruce chant. So that kind of sounds like a boo.
Yeah, and he didn't seem like
that's a thing though. I don't think they do a Bruce.
Were you saying boo or Bruce? Bruce. Yeah, so
I was saying boo.
Perfect. Yeah, I don't know. So Blueprints is weird. Like, you inherit this mansion from, or this estate rather, from your great uncle. But in order to fully get your full inheritance, you have to fully explore the mansion and find a special room. So since it's a roguelike, you have a certain number of steps. So each time you step into a room, it subtracts a step and you start with 50. But each time you go to open a door, it gives you three possible rooms to construct, basically. And you know what happens is, if you run out of rooms, like if you hit too many dead ends and you can't proceed, or if you run out of steps, then you have to call it a day, and then the next day when you go back in, you have an empty slate again. So and that's what it is. When the blueprints come up, when you go to open a door, it'll tell you, okay, you know, that you can get a library, you can get a bedroom, and it'll tell you where the other doors are going to be. So obviously you don't want to, you know, the goal is to not hit a dead end, but then some doors end up being locked and you got to find keys. And then some blueprints require gems to create, so you got to find gems. And then you can buy items if you find coins. But some of the items are useful, some of them aren't. You can find a shovel, and sometimes you can dig up mounds of dirt in certain green rooms that are like outdoor, like greenhouse types of rooms. I don't know. So I don't know. I was starting to get frustrated with it because it just seems like there's too much RNG involved. It seems like even when I made good choices, the game just screwed me. Like when the game doesn't give me any keys, I get stuck behind a locked door and have to start over. But when the game gives me 6 keys, I don't run into a single locked door or chest. It's like, okay. And like there's just often I felt like the developers were trolling me. That's all.
I've heard it takes a few runs to get going. Like sometimes with roguelikes like that, like you're just going to fail until you unlock enough things.
Yeah.
Which often cannot be, which depending on the game is not a very satisfying like gameplay loop, which I get.
Well, it's like Hades is the good kind of roguelike where you get, like every run is meaningful because you get currency you can spend on upgrades in between and other items. This is the bad kind of roguelike where you're every time you start over, you have nothing, you know, and there's no permanent boosts between runs.
I think there are.
Well, I didn't.
I haven't played the game, so I can't tell you for sure. I'm just basing that on what I've heard.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing that
just haven't gotten to them yet, but supposedly there are.
Well, like
that's all I can say.
Sometimes you'll get a coat check room where you can deposit one of your items, and then that way you can pick it up the next time that room spawns, and that can be helpful. And then what happened was on one of my runs, I ended up outside and was able to unlock a gate that had previously been locked. And then there was like a shed, and when you go to open that door, it spawns one of three possible, you get three choices, but like it gave me a shed, and in the shed there was a shovel and a lockpick. So at the start of each run now, that's the only permanent thing that I've gotten where
at the start of my run, I can go outside, go over to that door, possibly spawn a useful room to get tools or other things. But it also takes 6 steps to go there and back. So it's a risk versus reward kind of deal as well. You might not get anything useful and you just wasted 6 steps. And then at one point, one of the rooms I created said, oh, you'll get a bonus of 20 extra steps on your next day. And I ended up failing out after only using about 20 steps. So it's like, oh, that wasn't necessary. Sometimes you'll find a door that requires a key card to open. So I had one run where I got a key card and no door to open with it. And on another run, actually, I've had 3 more runs where one of those doors came up and they did not give me a key card. I found a room with a breaker where you can disable the key card door, which I thought meant, oh, it'll just open without a key card. No, it disables the key card readers, which makes it impossible to open, which makes no sense to me. So I don't know. That's a neat little game, and I'm sure I'll put a little more time into it because it was interesting. But it's just, yeah, you have runs where you basically don't accomplish anything, and then you have runs where you're so close and then they screw you. So that's just how that game is. And I think that's all I've been playing other than Marvel Rivals, but you know, we play that regularly. So
true.
Did they make the thing better yet?
No.
Did they make Iron Fist worse yet?
No.
No.
Did they add Daredevil yet? No.
No.
Oh, I finished watching.
I'm surprised by that one.
The first season of that, by the way.
Oh, you watched Born Again?
Yes.
Oh, man, it's wild, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I didn't even hate Disney. The Punisher.
Yeah. And
more like Daredevil Bored Again.
Well, no, I mean, no, Disney does... There were no fucks given. Let me tell you, Disney does not give a fuck on this in those last couple episodes. Yeah. So I'd like to see where that goes. And then I know I mentioned it already, but Charlie Cox is Gustav in Clair Obscur.
He's very good.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about that.
Yeah.
Obliquely.
Yeah, I tuned in near the beginning, and then I had stuff I had to do. So the only thing I had put in chat was just when you were talking about the price going up on the Xbox, I'm like, gee, it's almost like they don't want people to buy it. Oh, no, I understand the reasoning behind it, but I was thinking today, I'm like, you know, Microsoft is a software company, like you said. They just want you to use Windows. They don't care what device it's on. So at this point, they just want you to use Game Pass. They don't care what device you have. And, but I mean, I thought about it. I'm like, gee, your console's not selling, so you make it more expensive. It's like, are you looking for an excuse to just stop making it?
I think it's more just that, like, at this stage, they do not.
Yeah.
They're not in a position to lose money on hardware. And the way things are trending, if they stayed at the same price, they would start losing money on hardware.
Yeah. So, and then I was like, well, gee, you know, $80 games, it's like they don't want you to buy the games. They want you to get Game Pass. They want you to give them $20 a month until you're dead.
Game Pass.
So, anyways, that was my kind of take on the whole thing, was like, all right. I mean,
they don't want you to buy their games. I don't think that's true. I mean, you look at some of their recent quote unquote first party games, despite being on Game Pass, they have sold like a ton of copies on like PlayStation.
Yeah.
They definitely want to make the Game Pass value proposition look better by like showing you like you could get one game or you could get 3 months of Game Pass and play that game and a bunch of other ones.
Yeah. And that's what I use it for. I turn it on for a month to try out games and then I'll buy the ones that are actually good when they go on sale.
To be honest, if my kids didn't use it, I would have turned it off at this point.
Yeah.
I just have not been playing anything on Game Pass.
Well, like, I really like the Series X, but I don't want to have to buy another one if it breaks. I don't want to have to pay $600 for a replacement. That's absurd.
Probably you could pay for a repair.
Yeah, maybe. We'll just hope that doesn't happen. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm tired. I'm calling the shots. I'm putting an end to this podcast.
Okay.
That's fair. How many, tell them how many hours you were on at the DMV.
7. It was bad.
Dear Lord.
Remember the episode of Rocco's Modern Life when he had to go to the DMV?
I don't. I only watch that very occasionally.
Oh, okay. Well, that's what was so great about that show, though. It was I'm not sure that it really was meant for kids, though. It was kind of gross, but he does adult things.
Kids love gross things.
Yeah. So as an adult, it's
like, Simpy was so popular.
Yeah. Laundry day is a very dangerous day. Yeah. But so the DMV episode, I don't know what happened. For whatever reason, he had to go there and he had to take another driving test. And So then like his gas cap went missing, so he like failed the test. But then the person who took it returned it. And then this kid is talking to her dad and she's like, "Teacher says every time a gas cap is found, an angel gets its wings." And the dad goes, "Well, your teacher's full of snot." Yeah, I thought it was funny. Anyways, continue.
Yeah. Gaijin's not here, but we're going to real quick recommend you that you should support your indie authors by reading variously Princesses of the Pizza Parlor, if you were in the mood for the literary equivalent of an actual play podcast, or Tanuki at the Teapot, if Japanese folklore is more your thing. And why am I blanking on the title of the most recent one? The Litroidvania one.
Oh,
I'm checking his Amazon.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's where you can find these. Amazon. And Kindle Unlimited, and Dead Tree formats for print.
Amazon, where you can't find the Switch 2 or any of its accessories.
Yeah, Nintendo and Amazon get into like a fight about once every 3 years.
Yeah.
And then like all first and third party Switch shit disappears from the US Amazon, and then it comes back a few months or years later. It's really weird. It happens so often, I don't even question it at this point. There we go. Vainglorious, long as the night. Beloved Litroidvania.
I was going to say dark as the night or something like that, but that didn't sound right. Okay.
I will beat you into the ground.
Who is that? Yes, who is that I'm singing?
Shit. I don't care. Eat shit, motherfucker.
Buy my book.
Please consider supporting your local author who is not here tonight but will be here surely in the future. Michael Yarimizu, Yarimizu. If you Google that, you will find these and many others, all available Kindle Unlimited or Dead Tree formats in print on demand. So, you know, make your picks. There's no wrong answers. So that's recommended. Joe, where can they find you?
You can find me on Blue Sky, Joey at smokinjoegamer.bsky.social. You can find me on twitch.tv/smokinjoegamer. You can find me on YouTube at smokinjoegamer at smokinjoegamer86. So this is Metroidvania. It is a horrible pun, but I am sticking with it. This is my third year in a row, so I'm currently doing season 3 of Metroidvania on YouTube. So my first episode was the latest Bloodstained Ritual of the Night DLC, Dominique's Curse. And yes, it's very much plays like Castlevania 2, but with some much needed quality of life improvements. So I took out two of the bosses so far and got some new abilities, and it's like, okay, this is actually kind of neat. And I got it for $5, so that's fine. So that was my first episode. So I'm going to keep doing those videos. On Twitch, I've been streaming on Saturdays and Wednesdays. So this week I ended up doing Stanley Parable Ultra Deluxe on Wednesday, and then again on Thursday. That was an unplanned stream, but I just wanted to show off that new content because I thought it was hilarious. So both of those streams have been exported to YouTube. And then on Sega Saturday, I started really late and just did like an hour and a half of Metaphor. And I don't know if that's going to get exported or not. I don't know. So we'll see. But that's, yeah, that's where you can find me. So typically Wednesday and Saturday afternoons or nights, I've been starting around 7, 8, 9 o'clock those 2 days. And then in June, when I get my Switch 2 with Mario Kart, of course I will be streaming that constantly. So hopefully people will want to watch that. I don't see why they wouldn't. I'm going to play as Penguin. I'm going to play as Cow. I'm going to play as Pokey. I'm going to play as Ninji. It's going to be
awesome. God's most abandoned Mario game.
Yes, exactly.
Don't. The Island of Misfit Racers.
That's the idea, yes.
That's what I'm here for.
I'm going to have fun with that. I am a sicko for all those awesome characters. So then,
I didn't know you're such a fan of Penguin.
Yeah. In Mario Kart 64, I tried like hell to land on that little island where the penguin is in the ice stage, and I could never make it. And I was told by a lot of people, no, you'll never make it. And I never did, unfortunately.
good told job on the haters. Never could do it, and they were right.
They were
right. I will quote that most beloved of tweets on this one. The haters said I couldn't do it, and they were correct. Honestly, great call from the haters.
Yeah.
Is that a drill tweet?
No, it is not.
Yeah. Then of course,
it is
true.
But remember, Super Mario 64, you had the penguin race, and then you had the mom penguin, and you had to find her baby penguin. But if you bring over the wrong one, she's like, "That's not mine." Yeah.
Yeah. And then you pitch that motherfucker off the stage.
Yeah. And then when you're racing the penguin, if you use the shortcut, he's like, "You cheated."
Yeah, you get the piss.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's also a very rare glitch where he will fall off the stage. That's always very funny.
Love it. So, yep. So, yeah, no, so, do check that out, because if I keep getting no viewers, then I don't know if I can motivate myself to keep doing it. But I really think I might be better off keeping, like, Twitch and YouTube content separate. That's what I'm thinking. So I'm thinking Metroidvania should just be offline recordings that I can do some editing with and throw up on YouTube. And then I think Twitch will just be, you know, Wednesday, whatever, and Sega Saturday. That's kind of the plan going forward. I think that's a good idea. And then check out Blue Sky and YouTube for anything like music or, other related pop culture things,
music or shitpost related.
Yeah, I do a lot of shitposts, and I think I'm funny. So sometimes, Pause from RP Gamer does like my post periodically, and I appreciate that. So that's cool.
Cool friend.
Yeah.
Let's see.
I will stop rambling, and we can wrap this up if you'd like.
Yeah, let me just wrap this up and say next time we'll actually answer some questions, hopefully, fingers crossed. But if you want to catch us when we stream, our stream schedule has moved slightly. Regular episodes now are recorded at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern, on Mondays.
Monday.
twitch.tv/askwheels. We also have sister show that we have referenced in this very recording, Shenanigans, which is Sundays at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern. I see way too much of you fuckers in rapid succession now, and I need the rest of the week to detox.
Good.
I know, it's two nights in a row now, but I got the rest of the week to rest.
And we have the rest of the week to detox from each other and then hate each other all over again on Sunday.
The rest of the week to prepare to finish Mario Party.
And unfortunately, yes, it looks like that's what we're going to be doing.
That's on the menu. They're
I'm
going to
holding
finish the
Shenan hostage until we finish
that. Joe and Wheels made the infinite mistake of starting a Mario Party 3 board, and now apparently they can't stop anymore due to some sort of tontine, I would assume.
Yes, and even though Civilization 7 has cross-platform play, the Switch version is not getting the latest patch until next month, so I guess.
God, I fobbed off that explanation as a joke, and then it turned out to be real.
Yeah. So when I turned on my Steam Deck last night, it said, "Oh, okay, there's an update for Civ 7." And I thought, okay. And then he goes to load it up on the Switch, and it's like, "Oh no, your versions don't match." And it's like, "Oh, fuck off." So
yeah, and then you looked it up, and it's like, yeah, this the versions will be brought up to date when the Switch 2. compatibility patch is released.
I mean, and it's logical because they don't want to have to do another patch when it comes out, you know? One patch instead of two, I suppose. Yeah, it's awful. So then, yeah. So I guess that's what we're playing next Sunday. But the Sunday after that, who knows? Could be anything. And
could even be a boat.
Okay. Once June hits, there will be Mario Kart. Don't you worry. There will be F-Zero GX. Don't you worry.
There will be Soul Calibur 2. Don't you worry.
Yes.
And I don't know. I think that I can probably eventually trick Wheels into playing the new co-op missions in Yakuza 0 Director's Cut.
Oh, that's a thing?
Yeah, there's co-op missions in that one.
Oh, and I just remembered we got the Capcom Fighting Collection 2 coming up.
That's next week.
Yeah, that's coming real soon. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to have to go pre-order that.
You better eat your goddamn vegetables and finish Mario Party 3 so that we can play some Capcom versus SNK 2.
Yeah.
I just paid that off at GameStop while also paying off my Switch 2.
I'm actually not going to be I will play some CVS 2, but I'm actually going to be arguing that we need to play Plasma Sword Nightmare of Bilstein.
The fuck is that?
Star Gladiator 2.
The fuck is that?
That was Capcom's 3D Star Wars knockoff fighting game.
Oh.
Yeah, I had never heard of it until I saw pictures of it for this compilation, and it's like, that actually looks neat. I would like to try that.
Yeah, a game, like, there's a lot of very good fighting games on that would never have been re-released on their own. Like, Project Justice is Rival Schools 2, that game fucking owns.
Yep.
Plasma Sword is Star Gladiator 2, that game fucking owns. Power Stones 1 and 2, both of those are great. CVS 1 and 2, both of those are great. I think I might still be. There's an extremely random inclusion of Street Fighter Alpha 3 Upper.
Oh yeah, and I forgot about that.
Is it going to have Street Fighter Evolution?
It's Capcom Fighting Evolution. Is that what you're thinking of?
Yes.
Yes, that's like the worst game on the collection, but it's also very funny.
Guile gets to fight a T-Rex. It's great.
Guile fights a T-Rex. All of the SF3 characters are overpowered. The game is entirely recycled assets. It's not very good, but it is very funny. So yeah, we'll have a good time with that.
But will we ever get Street Fighter EX plus Alpha?
Now the issue with EX is that Capcom doesn't own everything in it.
Okay.
Capcom owns the Street Fighter characters. Arika owns the non-Street Fighter characters.
Skullamania,
Doctrine Dark, Cracker Jack, Darun Mista. All those weirdos are Arika owned. Okay. Those games are really interesting, and I'd love for them. I wouldn't be surprised if they can find a way to get that to happen, but they would have to negotiate for them. But, you know, never say never. If they do another Capcom fighting collection, I would not be surprised to see EX in there. Those games are actually good and pretty interesting.
Yeah. Yep.
The names of a lot of these characters are insane, though. Doctor and Dark is one of the most deranged sounding names anyone's ever had.
Oh, do you think the next Perfect Dark game will be $80 at launch?
Yes.
Okay.
If it ever comes out, yes.
I'm sure it'll come out eventually, but yeah, like the Microsoft's verbiage was basically like our future first-party games, some of them will be $80, and Perfect Dark, for all the time and money they've invested in it, damn well better assume that's going to be $80 unless proven otherwise.
Oh, and then Doom Dark Ages, I think, is the 14th. So, looking forward to that.
Boom, it's Doom.
I'm going to try it on Game Pass first, and hopefully it'll be more like Doom 2016 and less like Doom Eternal. In my opinion, that would be awesome, but we'll see.
We shall see.
Okay.
But yeah. Mondays and Sundays, 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern, if you want to catch us live at Q&A Quest or Shenanigans, respectively. But otherwise, I'm tired. See you, Space Cowboys.
See ya.
Good night.